What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. It's the whole crew. Summer League basketball rolls on. The Memphis Grizzlies finish the Utah Summer League 2-1, along with everybody in Utah went 2-1 except for the Jazz, and they didn't win a single game. You love to see it. I have to point this out, though, because Isaac was hating on my guy Jared Butler the other night, and Jared Butler was not super efficient tonight, but he was the leading scorer in this game. And out of everybody on this Utah roster, he may be the only NBA-level talent. Can you at least give him that after this showing tonight, Isaac? Or are you going to continue?
Who did you say?
Jared Butler.
I didn't say it. I'm just – what I said that I meant, there's nobody on that team that's really done anything in NBA. Like, I didn't say that there weren't any NBA talents on that team. I just said nobody team has really played in minutes. Like, you got Zaire with the Grizzlies and Xavier Tillman. They don't really have anybody on that team that's really done anything in regular season. I mean, he's played, I think he averaged 3 points, but I don't even know how many games he's played in. That's what I meant when I said that.
I guess we're going full on Disney. We ain't going to talk about Bruno because Bruno played some NBA minutes. He played some NBA minutes for Memphis. We don't talk about Bruno on the Grizzlies podcast. Is that what it is?
Man, 2 years away from being 2 years away, man. Looks like he might be there on the summer league level at least. But he looked good out there tonight in the first half, man. He was giving Grizzlies all kind of problems out there, man. He's knocking down corner threes, just doing all kind of stuff out there. Athletic.
The first time I seen that dude, his haircut, like he had the same cut as Giannis. And I walk out there and I knew it wasn't Giannis, but like he's the tall, lanky frame. And I'm like, man, the Memphis Grizzlies got baby Giannis out here. What is going on? And then, yeah, like it wasn't even close. I'm like, you see him. He shows flashes, but he's never able to link the flashes together. It's unfortunate for him. Candace, you chimed in a little bit there. I hadn't even tossed it to you yet. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I think I'm calming my nerves down just from the roller coaster that was that Grizzlies game. But it was interesting to say the least.
Yeah, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of sizable Spain hate from all you guys. I see you out there, Grizz Nation, hating on my guy. And he did have a much better second half after struggling. Like, he looked like he didn't even belong on the floor in the first half. The second half went much better for him. But I do have a question. My box score shows that he had 7 personal fouls. Does anybody else, like, does yours show that?
That is correct. He had 7. Surprised it wasn't 10. Yes, he had 7.
Yeah. They don't foul out in summer league?
No, you get 10 fouls. You get 10 in summer league.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even know. That is nuts. That's insane. I thought that was a typo. I'm like,
No, man. Because I remember when they said he had 5, and I was like, and I think, I can't remember who that was. Somebody on Twitter was saying, man, he's about to foul out. And I was like, man, you get 10, man. He's only halfway there.
Yeah, hey, you got him. You might as well use him, I guess. That's I can't say he put him to good use, though. 6 turnovers from him. In the night, 14 points, 8 rebounds, the 6 turnovers, 7 personal fouls, -6. But a lot of positives in this game, man. Kennedy Chandler late in the game, he had a move to the basket where he hit that kind of, you know, right-hand extension layup, very Ja Morant-esque. And I was like, ooh, I like it. And, you know, his shot looked good tonight, 2-for-4 from 10. A lot of good stuff from him. Laravia had some defensive flashes out there. There was one specifically he was getting back. It was a fast break and quick hands. He was able to break it up, and then it led to a basket going the other way for the Grizzlies. Zaire Williams coming up with the Brandon Ingram talk. I saw somebody said he's basically Brandon Ingram already. I don't know that I'm going to give him that much credit already, but he did look good. He was taking some shots off the bounce tonight. I really like that. I don't like to see the 1-for-7 from 3. But a ton of positives. Candace, I'm going to bounce it to you first here. You pick out your biggest positive from this game and run with it.
Biggest positive, I think, was David Roddy, who made a strong showing. I think he was one of the best players on the court, particularly in that first half when really the whole team was struggling. I think as a unit, I think the only thing was sort of David Roddy and Zaire were the two that was sort of carrying the load during that difficult first half, and Zaire was struggling himself. So David Roddy, after having the worst plus minus on the team, came out was a +9. on the court. He had he got five rebounds, one assist, and he was shot the ball a whole lot better after struggling offensively in that first game. He was 6 from 10 from the field. He was 0 for 2 for 3. I think he'll find that. I think he's just kind of getting his rhythm. But most importantly, I think more than just the stats, he just looked more comfortable in the game. You just want to see him sort of find his rhythm. You could see him sort of adapting to the pace. You could see him knowing where he should be, knowing his role, not being as lost. I think he showed some defensive flashes, which I was happy to see. And he was just aggressive. You could just see an intentional decision from him to just turn this game around and just to have a completely different game than he had before. And I think he carried that team in that first half. So it was great to see from him. And he really finished strong in the second half too. So just most complete performance, I think I'd give that to him.
Man, for me, I think it was Kennedy Chandler. And David kind of touched on one of the points I was going to bring up earlier, that right-hand layup. Just beautiful, like you said, very Ja Morant-esque. So they kind of switched roles up. In the first half, it was more Zaire on the ball and Kennedy off the ball. And they switched it up in the second half, and I think both of those guys kind of played better in their second role with Zaire playing off the ball and Kennedy Chandler playing on the ball. The offense looked really, really good with Kennedy Chandler out there running. One thing I had noticed early in the first half and in game one, it seemed like Kennedy was kind of hesitant to shoot the three. He looked confident shooting it tonight, went 2 of 4, looked good knocking them down because there were several times in the first half tonight in game one where he was wide open and he seemed hesitant to shoot it. He'd pass it up and kind of drive. There was one move in the first half, and I tweeted about it, where he made a beautiful move. He ended up getting a shot block. He didn't finish it. But he had a nice pump fake from the perimeter and quickly just boom, zoomed to the rim and showed some hang time, showed that athleticism off. He ended up getting a shot block, came in from Taco or Bruno that blocked the shot, but it was really good move. I mean, he showed off the athleticism. I mean, he was just hanging in the air, just like you kind of see from Ja Morant, man. He had some hops. I think 45-inch vertical as high as the combine. I'm really excited about him. I think he's a guy that's going to surprise some people, I wouldn't be surprised if he finds his way in the rotation at some point this year. You definitely think with kind of what we've seen with Ja, he's going to miss some games at times. So I think that's going to be an opportunity. And we even talked about last night that they can play some of these guys together. So I think Kennedy Chandler, outside of LaRavia, might be the guy that can find his way into the rotation. But we'll see what happens with Roddy. I still have some questions with him. I think that he might be a guy. I know it's hard to make any determinations from summer league, but I think with him being so much of a question of what position he plays and stuff like that, I think that he might be a guy that, outside of Vince Williams, that kind of spends the most time in South Haven. I don't think we're going to see LaRavia in South Haven at all. I think Kennedy might be there at some point, but I also think he's going to spend a lot of time up with the Grizzlies because I think he just brings a lot of things. I think you saw what he does with the defensive end. And, I mean, he's just confident out there. He looks like a guy that belongs. And I really like what I saw out of him tonight. But, again, I was a big believer of him coming in. He hasn't done anything to change my mind. Matter of fact, I think I'm even more confident now at this point.
Yeah, I think I'm fine with Chandler being on the opening day roster and not ever seeing a minute in South Haven. I think that he can come in and he can produce day one. I don't think he's going to have, like, an extensive role, but, you know, like that – 15 to 18 minutes off of the bench. I think that he can be effective. And with what he's showing, there's no doubt in my mind, you know, Candace asked us about that on a previous episode. Do we think we could see him play on the floor with Tyus and Ja? And there's no doubt in my mind now, even before then, I was like, yeah, I think he can do it. But I seeing what he was able to do tonight when he was playing off the ball with Zaire, I'm confident in it. And I think that he's probably had the best showing so far for the rookies.
One of the things that's interesting to me about Chandler is he seems to play some of his best ball in the fourth. He seems to have sort of just this gear, this knack for just kind of turn it on when it matters most. And I see, we'll watch and see if that trend continues, but that's something that's just interesting, at least that I've observed in the past couple of games where he's just kind of got that, you know, clutch. I'm not sure clutch gene is sort of the right term. He made the clutch in game winning steal before, but just that different gear that he's got that sort of reminds me of, you know, Ja. We used to talk about fourth quarter Ja, how he can just go in another direction. And so that's been good to see. as well.
Yeah, him being able to create his own shot is going to be huge. And that's something, you know, we talked about half court offense from the Grizzlies. And I think that this gives them somebody else. He had a great move. He didn't, I think he got fouled. He was trying to pass the ball, ended up getting fouled, but he got past his defender. And I think he was looking to pass the ball. So he didn't really see how much space he created there, but it was like a hezzy and then a chain. Like he shifted gears very quickly and created separation from that defender. And he could have got to the rim for a layup, but he ended up getting fouled trying to pass the ball. And I love everything that I'm seeing from him. You know, I know it's early. We don't know what Laravia or Roddy is going to look like moving forward in the Vegas Summer League. But we'll move on to Laravia from there. And Isaac, I'll toss it to you here in just a second. If you've got anything else on Chandler, you can throw it in there. But Laravia, I don't know if you would call it struggle, but he was 0 for 3 from 3 tonight. So is the sky falling? Is Laravia toast? Did climbing miss with him?
No, man, but I think it shows that a lot of people felt like, oh, man, well, he knocked out all these shots down in game one, that he's going to be awesome. There's no questions about him. And I think tonight with the rookie class kind of showed outside of Chandler, because I think Chandler played fantastic. And even Roddy played well, but I think it showed that these guys are not going to be perfect. And for some reason, there are people out there that feel like that. Like they're just, you lose Melton, you lose Kyle, you're just going to plug these guys in. They're going to be just as good. And a lot of people feel like even better, like they've upgraded. And I think it shows tonight that these guys, they're still going to be question marks. They're going to be ups and downs with these guys. They're not going to be perfect. Because, I mean, you're talking about a summer league level competition. It's going to be different. Some people are even talking about Laravia starting night one, game one. And I think tonight shows that you might need to pump the brakes on that. But that's been my point the whole time. Like, I still feel like they need to go out and fill a couple holes. I think power forward and backup shooting guard are still two things that I feel like they need to address before the season starts. Because, again, I mean, these rookies are fine. Like, I like Laravia. I like Roddy. Definitely like Kendi Chandler, what I've seen from him. And you can go deeper than that. Vince Williams has showed some great things. Kenny Lofton has showed some good things. But I think when you're a team that wants to be a contender and contend at the top of the Western Conference, when you bring in guys at the bottom of the first round, those are not guys that you should be going into the season in a position where you – have to lean on those guys. It should be more of a luxury, in my opinion, when you bring it in. When you're not talking about lottery picks, these shouldn't be guys where you say, man, I'm bringing this guy in and we need him to be this. Like, it should be a situation where if a guy goes down, he can fill in and he might be a good player, but you don't want these guys day one on a really good team to have to do certain things in order for you to be successful. And I think tonight showed that they might just not be plug and play. I think they're the Laravia showed something like tonight he did knock down a three-pointer, struggled shooting the basketball, still did some good things. He had three steals. Like I said, did some things on the defensive end. But I think the question still with him is he going to be a three? Is he going to be a four? And who's he going to be at a guard on a night-in, night-out basis? And I don't think you're going to find a lot of those questions answered in summer league. But again, man, they're in a position right now, if they don't go out and do anything else, they might not have any choice. I mean, sink or swim, game one. I mean, again, man, that's just not the position that I would like to be in. A lot of people seem to be okay with that. And I mean, it's just not the situation. My guy, Joe Mullinex, former site manager for GBB, put out a tweet today and he kind of echoed my sentiments. It's just not how a contending team you would think would conduct themselves. I mean, that seems to be a minority opinion and we'll see what happens. But again, I'm a fan of Laravia. I just don't want this team to be in a position where they need him to be really, really good game one. Cause I think it's unfair even for him. Like, you shouldn't put him in that position because I think he's still learning. And again, he's not a lottery pick. He's not a guy that's expected to necessarily come in and do that. So we'll see what happens. But that's just kind of where I am on that.
Yeah. I think it's more than likely to look sort of similar to what Zaire looked like before, where, I mean, not in play, but just in terms of, you know, Zaire got those reps and they definitely put him out there. It's a little more challenging this time because it was the focus was on Zaire getting reps and maybe not as much, obviously, Salty Aldama. And this time it's four rookies you're trying to work into the rotation. It's a little bit more difficult, but I think Laravia will be the one to kind of take I think I can see them going that direction with him more than anybody else, just because of where they picked him and everything else, and just the spot that's needy, you know, that's a spot of need. So that's what they might be deciding to go with. It does leave me with the questions, but we have seen it work out throughout the season. In Zaire's case, he looked terrible to start the season and he sort of worked through it. I think Ravi will have a higher floor than that at least, but there definitely be some growing pains if that's what they decide to do.
Did you guys see the report? Mark Stein was talking about he was just talking about the NBA in general, but he said he felt like the Grizzlies are a team to watch out to make a splash type move like what the Timberwolves did. Did you guys see that report?
Yeah, I saw it. Mark Stein said that, but then he kind of went back on it and said that, but he doesn't really expect it. And I think I agreed. I don't really expect it either. I think they said other teams are kind of saying that. And I think the reason why they're saying that, because they look at the draft picks and some of the young guys and tradable assets, Danny Green contract and different things they can move around to make that kind of move. But I put out a tweet today, a kind of a thread of where, and we haven't even talked about Jitty. Jitty signing a new contract today, 3 years, $19 million. And I've come to the conclusion, and I think once you come to this conclusion, I think it'll make – you'll feel better about – not necessarily better, but you'll understand the lack of moves they made. I think the direction that they're going, they're pretty much – I don't think they're going to do a lot outside of what their current roster is. Like, they're not going to do a lot in free agency. They're not going to make a lot of trades to bring in significant salary. I think they're in a spot where they're going to, for better or worse, they're going to double down on Ja, Jared, and Bane. And they're going to rotate out these veteran guys and attempt to replace them with guys on rookie contracts and hope they can get that same production. And if these guys hit, those are the guys they'll keep around and they'll eventually pay them. And the ones that they don't hit on, they'll rotate them out and draft new guys and kind of start the process over again. And I think that's kind of what they're doing. I don't necessarily agree with it because it might work. But my fear is what's going to end up happening is you're not going to bring anybody else in. And if this core ends up not being good enough to win a championship, you're going to find yourself in a spot where you're stuck. You're going to be in between, like you kind of saw with the grit and grind area where they didn't have any money. They didn't really have a lot of flexibility. And you kind of are what you are. You're a good team, but you're not good enough to win a championship. And that's the danger in building that way. But from the moves that they made and lack of moves they made this summer, I've kind of figured out that that's what they're doing. And it's not the way that I would do it because I feel like and I'm afraid that they might be outsmarting themselves because I feel like they can just draft guys and replace veterans and it's going to work out every time because they drafted well in the past. And sometimes you're going to miss on some of these guys. And when you do, that's going to be a big miss if you operate in the way that I think they are. And that's kind of the way that I think they're going. Again, it might work out. Maybe this core is, and you can and build around the bench on these young, cheap contracts and rookie players, and it might work out and you might win a championship. But I just feel like with the extensions that they have coming up in the next couple of years, I feel like they should have been a bit more aggressive this summer because I feel like they're kind of missing that window, and that window is going to close and you're going to be locked into the three guys that we have and the rookies and the cheap contracts that you have around. And I think that's where we are. We'll see how it plays out, but it's a risky proposition because I think, again, you get stuck and then you're going to be a good team and you're not going to have premium draft picks because you're a good team every year and it's going to get tough.
There's a quick question for you go, David, just to clarify, you mean long-term, right? So you're not just talking about this offseason. You're talking their strategy for the next few years moving forward.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to spend a lot of money to surround those three guys. That's my theory right now. Like, I feel like they're going to, like you said, just like we saw this summer, they're going to try to – the veterans that are already on this roster, the ones that they feel like are not long-term pieces, they're going to try to rotate them out like they did. They moved Melton, didn't re-sign Kyle Anderson, and they replaced them with guys on a rookie contract. And I think that's what you're going to continue to see. If LaRavia and Roddy and these guys hit, they'll keep them. And then when it's time for them to pay them, they'll pay them. But if they the guys that they miss on, they're going to rotate them out and try to redraft guys to kind of replace them. And they're just going to keep repeating that process and bank on Ja, Bane, and Jaren, and whoever those guys they have around them are enough. I don't feel like they're going to spend a lot of money outside of that or bring in via trade, bring in significant money. That's my theory. We'll see. But that's kind of what I'm starting to believe that they're doing, and that's how they're viewing this.
So this model that you're discussing right here is very similar to what the Warriors done. And they're like, you know, they just won a championship. I think Otto Porter Jr. was really the only guy that they signed as a, you know, he played a big role for them. But, you know, you talk about Gary Payton, Jordan Poole, you know, you had your core of Steph, Clay, and Draymond.
Yeah.
And then you had these young, cheap contract guys.
So it could work.
They were able to produce. So it can be successful. You just have to be smart about it. You have to, you know, that Jitty contract, I'm completely fine with it. That's a tradable contract. That's something, you know, and even if he does not, you know, like we know what Jitty is, right? Like we don't expect him to blossom, or at least I don't expect him to blossom into some sort of all-star. He's just kind of a gritty role player that is going to be a regular season rotation guy, and he's going to play winning basketball whenever he's out there. But it's not like they extremely overpaid for him. I don't think they overpaid for him at all for what he's able to bring to the floor. And it may be something, you know, we're talking about like getting that backup too. It may just be Jitty. And maybe,
I mean, that is what it is. That's what this deal is about. Like, there's no question. I don't have any problem with the contract. Like, a lot of people, like some of these same people that said that they trust the front office blindly, everything they do is great, they were complaining about this contract today. And I was like, that's kind of funny that now I don't have a problem with what the front office doing, and now you do. But I don't have any problem with it at all. I think he's earned this contract. I think, like you said, he comes in, does his job, and with the cap keep continuing to go up, $6 million. It's not a lot of money anymore. I mean, I know if people kind of think of that from 3 or 4 years ago, and it's not the same. 6 years, 3 years, $19 million is not a lot of money. No, like, you're not going to get anything for that on a normal basis, other than some strange situation. A veteran guy just signing for a team he wants to go to. You're not going to get anything for that. So I don't have any problem with the contract at all, man. I'm happy for him again, man, because he's always been that guy. When you talk about next man up, he stepped in and came in and done his job. So I don't have any problem with that deal.
Yeah. What they done in the grit and grind era, they priced themselves out of going out to get guys. They overpaid. And because it was a small market, they had to overpay to go out and get a guy like Chandler Parsons. You know, Big Spain was he was campaigning for them to pay Mike Conley. And then out of nowhere, Mike Conley gets the richest contract in NBA history at the time.
Yeah,
which is kind
it's still weird, like, to think about when they put it out today. I don't know if it was today or sometime when he signed that deal. Might have been today. That was still kind of weird to think about, that Mike Conley at one time had the biggest contract in NBA history. Like, that's still wild to think about. But you knew at the time that the cap was going to go up, and it was easily the next contract is going to be bigger, and it's going to get bigger and bigger. But that's still wild that he holds the stat that at one time he was the highest paid player ever. And you're talking about Mike Conley, a guy who never been one-time All-Star that was an alternate. That's kind of wild to think about.
Yeah, he was not a guy that was going to – or that should have commanded the biggest contract in the league. And so, yeah, you can pay your guys and you can take care of them, but you just have to be smart about who you're paying. Ja Morant is a star. We know that Ja Morant is a star. He got paid. We saw what Jaren can bring to the floor. Obviously, we have concerns as fans that they don't have the concerns for the injuries with Jaren. He's had, you know, some bad luck with that stuff. So moving forward, if Jaren is unable to stay healthy, he's not going to get another contract. If he's able to stay healthy, he probably does, because when he's healthy, he is a dominant defensive player and exactly what you need around Ja Morant. So, you know, we see what these guys are doing. You have to pay the guys well that deserve to be paid and be very smart about your other contracts in order for this to work, so you don't price yourself out. And, you know, that we have heard, Kleiman say that this team is not going to be hindered by the typical small market budget that they're going to pay their guys. He did say that they are doing that, but we'll see how far this goes. I don't know that I'm fully bought into this is exactly what their plan is going to be. I think if you look at how Milwaukee handled it with Giannis and Chris Middleton, they got to the playoffs, got beat. They go through internal development. They get deeper in the playoffs. They get beat. Then they go out and they make that move to get that guy like Drew Holiday to push them over the edge. And so the Grizzlies were right there this year, right? Played super tough against Golden State. If the Grizzlies are healthy, maybe the Grizzlies are world champions this year. So we're going to see if this team is healthy, we're going to see what they can do. And if they get to the Western Conference Finals or they get to the finals and they're not able to get over that hump, I think that's when the move comes. If there's going to be a move, that's when it's going to have to come, because you can't – if you risk it too early, if you go all in too early, well, then all of your money is tied up, and then you're going to have to figure some way. You're going to have to be very smart in the way that you rebuild from there. But I think that, you know, we've on this show before discussed that we believe that Ja, Jaren, and Desmond Bane are a good enough core to get to the title, to bring this team a championship. It's all about putting the right pieces around.
Yeah, so I have a couple of thoughts on the contract. I do think it's good value. My only concern there would be if they're paying him to be the direct back. We talked about this yesterday, the direct back of the Desmond Bane. I do think that's – I'm really not sure he can get up to that role. I'm just not sure how that looks. And so that part would concern me. But I think even if – you know, I think it's best if he were to play a similar role that he played last year, I think that would still be worth a valuable contract and still be worth a contract extension. So I'm on board with the contract. I have concerns about what this might implicate for his playtime, but we'll ultimately see how that falls. And maybe he can. I'm a fan of Jiddy, so maybe he can step up his game to another level. He has improved a lot in his time in the league, so maybe he has another level in him. I just personally haven't seen that, but you know, you never know. And so maybe that works out. But back to your theory, Isaac, I sort of lay closer where David is, where I'm not sure that's their whole concept moving forward in terms of that's what they're going to do for sure. To me, it might be more, and I'm not saying that it's not, but I'm just more open to the fact that there may be a little bit more. I'm not sure it's linear, right? So we heard Zach Kleiman say all the time that, you know, building a championship roster, that's not linear. And to this point, it has been. And maybe this is just one of those times where it's not. I think it could be a combination of a few things as to why they're making the moves that they made this particular offseason. One, I'm not sure that they see a target that they feel like would be the piece to take them over the top. So to them, and we can identify people who we think might be or who we theoretically might, but the Grizzlies are very analytical, but they also want well-rounded players. And so maybe those players have flaws that they feel like will, you know, still ultimately be a liability and not help them get over the top. It could also be that they just didn't see that, I think one thing is, I'm not sure that the Grizzlies are getting the same deals. I think the Grizzlies, the deals that they made were pretty fair before. Maybe it's tougher with him being executive of the year. I don't know. The trades that have happened recently, they seem to be a bit of an overpay. I mean, I'm not just talking about the Rudy Gobert trade, but just other trades that I've seen, it just seems like one team gets fleeced. It seems a little one-sided in a lot of these trades that I've seen, not all of them, but, and so maybe it's just hard. You know, maybe the asking price is just too high and Kleiman's not really willing to play that. And he'd rather invest in young players and let those players go, let his veterans go for this season until they can learn a little bit more about their core, see the weaknesses, like David said, close to Milwaukee, and then make the big move. I think it might be a mix. I think we might see, my hope is that this is their only offseason in doing sort of that strategy. And maybe they see some better targets, some better free agent, you know, think people that they think might better help them in the long run. next season, and then maybe they can try to make some of those moves, but we'll see.
Man, I get what y'all are saying, but my question to that is, once those extensions kick in with Josh Jarrett, and you think you got Bane the year after that, how are you making that big move? Like, I mean, you're not going to have the flexibility to do anything that big. I mean, you can do like this summer. You had a mid-level exception. They still have the Golden State pick, but they're not going to have this huge war chest of assets anymore. And you're not going to have this clearest cap seat as you have right now. Like, how are you going to make that big move? Like, I get it. And people have told me that, they're just not ready to go all in yet. But when you got Ja, possibly a supermax on the books, you got Jaren kicking in, you got the Max Bane out. How are you going to go? What are you bringing in? And how are you going to bring it in? That's my question.
A few notes. So, one, I think it's not to be assumed that the move that they need to make is the one big splash. So that's an assumption. I'm not sure that they feel like that has to be the case. It could very well then being a variety of moves that helps build the core around them. We're not sure if they have to have a splash move to this point. I don't think there's enough data, especially because this team couldn't even finish this playoff series healthy, unfortunately. So there's still a lot of questions about that there. Two, I think they're sort of rebuilding their assets in a way. So they're getting these tradable contracts like Conchar, like hopefully if these rookies pan out, then those may be some valuable concepts. So they're almost, to some extent, to me, I could see it as them re-upping on some of those assets, reinvesting and sort of building up their chest if there was a big move to be made. Because like David just said, the contract is tradable depending on what happens with Tyus Jones. And well, that may or may not be tradable, debatable. But anyway, I think they're setting themselves up to be in that position again, like a Brandon Clark or, you know, some of these guys hidden play that kind of role. You can do that. I'd say those are my main 2 points. I just see a little bit of finesse that I think they're trying to position themselves to be able to take either road. I think they're being cautious about making a move and it being the wrong move. So I think they're taking the approach of they'd rather go back to what they know works to build things back up, even if it is a step back temporarily. I think they'd rather do that than set themselves up and be locked in to a splash move that's the wrong splash move. And then you pretty much have to start from scratch if it doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, to me, and it goes back to my point, I think you put yourself in danger of overplaying your hand. That's what I'm worried about. We'll see how it plays out. Again, I'm not saying that it won't work. I mean, because David put up a good example. Golden State kind of went this route, and you saw that they just won a championship. So it can work. I just think there are risks to it that for you to wait until you have all this money on the books and then try to do something at that point and kind of possibly take a step back this year to try to go forward. There's no guarantee that you're going to be able to do that. We'll see what happens. And again, it could work out fine. It could be it could end up going the Golden State route. It's just probably not the route I would go. I think with the season that they had this past season, I think I would have been a bit more aggressive and tried to fill in pieces around the core now instead of getting rid of veterans and kind of replace them with rookies and kind of thin it out this year and maybe making a move next year. I'm all in when I'm, If they were too close to me to kind of go this route. That's just my opinion. Like I said, and of course, obviously they don't agree with me and they're going a different direction, but that's how I feel about it. I feel like they were super close and close enough to the point to where it's not time to go back at all. Like you need to be gas pedal at this point, and they've gone a different route. So we'll see how it plays out.
So I've got 2 questions for you. We've kind of ran off the rails from the summer league game. Yeah. we'll get back into that, but this is good conversation. My first question is this: the moves that we have seen Zach Kleiman make, do you, and I'm not saying that you've implied this, but would you agree that he has a long-term plan in place? And like the majority of the moves that we've watched him make have been very calculated, and it's more of a chess move and not a checker move. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree.
The majority. I'm not saying all of them, because you and I have both been on record for what we felt like he kind of fumbled in this draft. But that's I think personally that, yeah, they don't have a huge like just buildup of assets right now, but they have contracts where you can, you know, you can, they still have the Danny Green deal. They may just eat that money, but Steven Adams is going to be a free agent after this season. Dylan Brooks is going to be a free agent. You got Brandon Clark, who's going to be coming up. Are you going to extend him? Or are you not going to extend him? There's a lot of money that is coming off of the books next year. You do have more money coming on with the Jaren extension, with the Ja max contract and all of that, but the cap is going up. And right now the Grizzlies are operating under the cap. If we see a growth, like if we see a boost from Zaire, and you already have Bane, you have Jaren, you have Ja. If you see Zaire reach his ceiling, we talk about a Brandon Ingram type ceiling for him, or maybe even higher than that. If you add that to a core of Bane, Ja, and Jaren, what does that do? Like that team should win a title theoretically, but look, I'm getting off of the track. Let me go. I'm going to go back. I want to go back to the question that I had for you. Is it possible that they had planned on going all in this offseason, but the injury to Jaren's foot kind of derailed that plan? So instead of trying to accelerate too fast, if you go all in right now and you rush Jaren back from this foot injury is very similar to the injury that Zion Williamson had, that had him out the entire season last year. So you have to be careful with it. You don't want to rush him back. This is a guy you just paid over $100 million. So they're going to be cautious with that. Do you think that that was a possibility? Because he implied, he said clearly, there was no, like, this is not us reading behind the lines. He said exactly, moving forward, we are going to put ourselves in the best position to win a championship. Is there a chance that the injury to Jaren kind of derailed what the plan would have been this offseason?
Yeah, and that press conference has been micromanaged, broke down. That's been a topic of conversation today. And me being a person who's heard every interview that he's ever done, I don't think there's any question that there was a shift in philosophy. A lot of people are saying that he wasn't saying that, like that he wasn't implying anything that they were going to push forward, that he was still saying the same thing he always said. And that's not true at all. If you've listened to his interviews in the past and you listen to that one, there was a clear shift in this. Everything we do is going to be through the prism of the future. He wasn't saying that anymore. And if you put it in that context, you know that's not what he was saying. A lot of people are saying like, I'm over exaggerating what he said. He was definitely implying that they, more so than they had ever had, was going to go for it a little bit this summer. And that hasn't been the case. They drafted the guys they drafted, they re-signed Tyus, which at that point I expected going into the offseason. That earlier I didn't thought it was a possibility that he would get out of here, but I was pretty confident that they were going to bring him back once we got to the offseason. And maybe that is. Maybe they decided with this Jaren injury, this isn't going to be the year to push it because we're not going to rush him back, and we're just going to kind of see how this year goes. If maybe we end up getting a little bit better draft pick than we expect, and we'll just let it play out. And maybe that could be a reason why they decided to go for it. I'm just, like I said, there is some money coming out of the books, but I'm just concerned that if you wait too long, that you're going to find yourself in a position to where you don't have the flexibility to do what you want to do. I mean, we've seen teams do that in the past. Like I said, the Grit and Grind Grizzlies did that, and not comparing Chris Wallace to Zach Kleiman or anything like that. But there are times where I feel like you can outsmart yourself. And I feel like this front office is done so good. They've been great. And I think a lot of times, sometimes being great too quickly can end up being an issue, because I think they might feel like they're too confident in their plan and they're not. I've always talked about this front office with Kleiman being proactive instead of reactive. But this offseason, I kind of feel like they may be too focused, too stuck on their plan. That maybe when you see some things happening around you, you need to react in a different way, and that they're not willing to do that. Like, they're tunnel vision on, this is what we plan on doing, this is how we're going to do it, and no matter what happens around us, we're not going to change. We're not going to veer off this plan at all. And that's what I feel like is dangerous. I mean, again, it could end up working out. You made a great example with Golden State. They end up winning the championship, kind of doing that same thing. But I also, again, just think there's a risk that you could find yourself stuck in the middle if it doesn't work out. Because I still feel like what I said earlier, I feel like that's more of what they're doing. I think they feel like with the top three guys, that those guys are good enough that they can just fill in rookies that they're good enough and drafted that they can hit on enough of these guys where they can just fill it in so they don't have to spend a lot of money on the support players. Like they could just have those top three guys, maybe a couple other guys, and you just fill in around those guys, and that team might be good enough to win a championship. And I think that's how they're operating. I could end up being wrong, but that's what I feel right now. I think that's what they're trying to do. I just don't think they're gonna spend a lot of money to go out and make big moves. I just from what I've seen this summer, because I just don't a team that was close as they are to not even use the mid-level exception. Like I feel like they didn't use it because they just didn't want to use it, and that's not what they're going to do. They're not going to go out and bring in free agents. I think there might be a trade because of the tearing injury, and you have the Danny Green contract. They might do something because of that, but I just don't think their plan is to bring in a lot of free agents. I think they're going to build strictly through the draft, and they're going to rotate those guys in and out. That's how I think they're going to operate, but we'll see.
Well,
go ahead.
You might be right. You might be right, but I also just feel like there's risk to your approach. There's risk to everything. So, I mean, either way, there are potential consequences if they went in and they went on the wrong move this offseason. If they were aggressive and those moves didn't work out. So I feel like they are sticking with their convictions. There is some reason to understand, not only with the Jaren injury, but I think with the fact that they got injured in the playoffs. And so there's a question mark about what are their real, we saw some weaknesses, but what are their real, what really prevents them from getting further? I think we had a clear answer about that after the playoff series with Utah. I'm not sure that the answer is as clear because they didn't get eliminated so much because of their play as much as a variety of circumstances, a lot of which were out of their control, pretty much. So there are just a lot of questions, and to be aggressive in an offseason that comes with so many questions, maybe you're right, and maybe that's their approach moving forward. But I also feel like it might be premature to make an assumption about the entire how they're going to build moving forward for the next three or four seasons based off of an offseason that comes with so many questions and so much uncertainty. It may just be a bit premature. And like I said, you may be right. So I'm not acknowledging that that's not a possibility, because it is. And you've got some evidence to prove it. But I just wanted to give the other side that, you know, there's just so many question marks. Is this the right time? In theory, with assets, timing wise, it makes sense. But circumstantially, I'm not sure that those two things line up.
And I want to point out what the Atlanta Hawks done, right? So they know that they have Trae Young. They know that he's a star. They go out and they make these moves to bring in these veterans. And now that team is in disarray because, you know, that they Cam Reddish gets upset and he demands a trade. And he's a guy, well, Reddish was like 10th overall pick. Like he was a lottery pick. And they had a lot of good young talent on that team, but they kind of rushed it just to be mediocre. Yeah, that they made the Eastern Conference Finals. But for me, my goal would not be just playoffs and Eastern or Western Conference Finals, whatever division, like whatever conference you're in. It would be to win a title. And so there's risk both ways. If you go all in too early, you end up like Atlanta, then you're losing. Like they got nothing, dude. They got pocket lint Doritos for Cam Reddish.
Whoa.
When, you know, and he's worth way more than that. So I would hate to see them get a guy that's a valuable piece and then end up donking it away because they went in too early. And it could very well, like you could try to slow play it and it backfire the other direction where you went too slow and now you don't have the money to pay the guys that you need to pay. But if we see Jaren come back at the end of this season and they make a deep playoff run and they're a piece away, look at the list of guys that are going to be available. Unrestricted free agents going into the 23 season. You've got Chris Middleton is going to be a free agent. Kyrie Irving, which, dear Lord, I don't even want to go down that road. Andrew Wiggins is a guy that, you know, he played a huge role on that Warriors team winning the championship. Al Horford's old as dirt. He's going to be unrestricted free agent, but you know, maybe he'll still have a little bit of gas in the tank. Nikola Vucevic, Harrison Barnes is a guy that I know Candace doesn't like because he's been in Sacramento too long, but he's won a championship. Miles Turner, Bojan Bogdanovic, Caris LeVert, Gary Trent Jr. Like, if you have a hole in your lineup, you're going to know what it is and what that need is after this season. There's a list of guys that are more than likely going to be available going into that next offseason where you can make that move, and they would still have plenty of cap space to do it.
The difference, though, that I would mention between the Atlanta Hawks situation when they kind of went in, because I disagree with that wholeheartedly, and the Grizzlies situation, the Atlanta Hawks weren't anything anywhere close to where the Grizzlies were last year. Like, I argue that the Grizzlies were already in a situation to where they're a piece or two away of winning the championship, because I felt like they could have easily won a championship this year. The Hawks were a bad team. The Grizzlies are not a bad team. I feel like the Hawks did it too early. I don't feel like the Grizzlies are in a completely different spot in their maturation process. I feel like they're miles ahead of where Atlanta was when they made those moves. That's the difference for me between that situation and where the Grizzlies are.
You're right about that. They are different situations. I would say though, that the level of questions and uncertainty about what really would take the Grizzlies out of the playoffs, if anything, is still very much so a question. And so with that in mind, making a move in the dark, so to speak, is that the best move? But I agree. The Atlanta, I'm not going to say they lucked into it. I mean, they earned their way to the playoffs, but just their regular season did not go anything close to that of the caliber that Memphis did.
That's fair. I mean, we can – there are other examples. I use them as a recent example, but I do agree that they are in a different spot. But, you know, you look at what about Philly whenever they go and they made the move for Jimmy Butler and it didn't pan out. That team was in a spot where they were ready to win, and they go out and they get that piece and it wasn't enough for them. And so – you know, like there's plenty of examples of teams that have done it the right way and were able to get over the hump. And there's plenty of examples of teams that have done it the wrong way and were not able to get there. So, you know, they've got to get lucky either way, man. You can have all of the right pieces, but you have to get lucky whenever it comes to the playoff run. All of your players have to stay healthy. Things have to go the right way. And so, like, I'm confident with this roster. I like where this team is. I don't know that they're going to be as good as what I would like for them to be this season after the showing that we got from them last year, but it's young. We don't know. Maybe Jaren, you know, everything goes great and Jaren comes back early. I know that's an absolute long shot.
I hope so. I definitely hope so.
There are a lot of things that could go right. Yeah, no, I'm not either. Though. Yeah. No, you know, I'm just saying that there are some things that could go right that could change where we're at. And, you know, but before last season, we were not at the spot. I think that you and I kind of predicted, I think I was right around 500 and you said about 45 wins and they exceeded expectations. So, you know, it's a wait and see approach. And I get where you're coming from with, you know, he definitely changed gears and I've watched people talk about, oh no, he didn't. Yeah, he completely did. Before that presser, it was always, we're going always to look through
long-term, through the prism of long-term.
It was the same verbiage, the same thing every single time. It was GM talk, very cheap, very, like, not focused at all. And for the first time ever, that changed to, we're going to be putting ourselves in the best position to win it all. That's completely different verbiage. You can try to dress it up and change it and make it something that it's not, but it's different. And so I'm on the same side as you whenever it comes to that, that was 100% a change in the direction that he was going. And maybe what we have in mind is not, I mean, obviously what we have in mind is not what he has in mind. So, you know, it's just, like, this offseason has been kind of tough to watch. The Jaren injury kind of just piled onto that. Yeah, but, you know, I wish that we were not dealing with that, and then we would maybe have a better picture of what they would be doing. Because I can't help but wonder if that's not what kind of changed what they were going to do in this offseason.
And I was going to say, we're way off track, but one thing that I do want to say is, why do people get so upset because you have an opinion of something? Like, I've never, like, I don't understand, like, if you, just because you have a question about something, like, when it comes to this front office, like, this fan base has got to the point to where they, you can't question them at all. Like, if you have any question about anything that's going on, you're a label, you're a hater. Like, and I don't get that mentality. Like, it is, because it's not you saying that this front office, you don't trust them or anything. You can have questions about something and not be quote unquote hating. And that's what it's turned into, which is weird to me. I know this front office has been great. 100%. Like, I trust them in development talent. I trust them with LaRavia and Roddy. And people have labeled me as, like, I don't like those guys. I had LaRavia in my top 10 for the Grizzlies at 22 and 29. And me and David have both talked about this. It's not who they drafted. It's how they drafted those players and the value that they got out of those trades. The management of assets is a question. It has nothing to do with LaRavia or Roddy. Like, they could end up being awesome. Like, I like LaRavia and a lot of things that he can do. I just don't like the way they got him. I mean, and it doesn't have anything to do with them. And so when you say that, people just take that on surface as face value. You say, oh, well, you don't like LaRavia and Roddy, which there couldn't be any more off base of anything that I've said, but that's just kind of where they've taken it to. But it's just weird to me, man, that just because you have questions or an opinion, when you're covering a team and you're in the media, you're supposed to have questions. Like, and it's weird that you can't. Like, this front office, again, has been great, but everything that they could do is not going to be perfect. Like you said, people are already talking about Sonny Aldama, and maybe that was a miss. It's still super early, but he has.
Y'all better stop it. Stop it.
They moved up. They moved up into the first round, man. Gave this man a guaranteed contract.
Cut the cord, man.
I'm close. I got the scissors out. I got the scissors out, man. I ain't cut it yet, but
no. That y'all rolling on it too.
I think the dream is over, man. With him.
To your question, I think a lot of it, if the people that are having the issues with what you're saying, if they're listening to the show, they get where you're coming from. You cannot, there's no way you can try to explain it.
They've been on my head, man, for legit questions. Like, it's been crazy to me.
You can't pick up the nuances. When it's on Twitter, you can interpret text however you want to. And I can't tell you how many times people have been mad at me because of a message that I sent. And they read it like, oh, well, he's being a jerk. And that's not how it was. You know, like when I sent the message, like, hey, this is a question or whatever. So you can't pick up the nuances of it. You know, and this is new territory, right? Because the Grizzlies have never had a front office that you could fully trust. And I know for me, at least, even when the grit and grind teams were having success, I never trusted Chris Wallace.
No, they lucked it. They lucked in all of that, right? To be honest, like all of that stuff.
They make the move. They get Z-Bo. They were like, the fit for the city was perfect for him.
I mean, Tony Allen was a guy that was just on the outs. They signed, wasn't even playing him. Lionel Hollins was starting Xavier Henry over him. Like, he wouldn't even playing. Like, they just, it's weird when you think back on how all that came together. Mike Conley took about 6 years before he really came into his own. I mean, they just lucked in all that. Z-Bo,
and y'all cut another guy that was the outcast. On Santi Aldama after 1 year and two summer league games.
Salty Obama, man, it's almost
you're
over.
You're on record for that, Candace. I'm bringing a receipt.
I will eat crow, but I'm going on record. The court.
Couple more games like tonight, man. I'm gonna go ahead and cut it, though. I'm gonna let you know.
I know when to cut my losses. I'm done.
Listen, we'll wrap it up. I think we're right about the hour mark. We started to talk about the summer league game. We got a little bit of that in there.
I think we went through all of the key players.
We did.
What a lot to talk about from tonight, man. That wasn't the prettiest game to kind of break down. What a lot
to talk about. Some waters.
Shout out to them for not quitting, though, man. They came back and won because they were getting dominated in that game, man. They turned it on, man. Tremont Waters, shout out to him. I mean, he had a big game, man. Had to steal and baited into the foul. He kind of got the momentum, man. He was locking up on D-Man, and he kind of started that charge, man, and they finished it going away. So shout out to them for that. But outside of that, man, it was some pretty ugly basketball out there tonight, man. Bad perimeter defense by the Grizzlies is terrible early in that game, man. I don't even know what what was going on out there, man. But they got the win, got that dub. So 2-1, Utah, let's move on to Vegas.
Wait, and they play again tomorrow night, right? We got
Saturday.
No, they're off tomorrow. Okay. Travel tomorrow.
Travel day to Vegas Saturday. And then Saturday. Let's see, who do they play Saturday? It is, man, I can't wait. There's so many games on Saturday.
Yeah.
They play the Clippers.
Was it 8 o'clock?
8:30.
8:30?
8:30 tip for us. They play the Clippers.
Clippers are a bad one, so they don't have a lot on that team, so that should be one. Hey. They should win. They have a pretty easy schedule. They play Brooklyn. Brooklyn has a really good team. They got Boston. Cam Johnson.
Boston's going to be playing on that Clippers team.
Yeah, he might put up 30 on them, but outside of that.
My guy Jay Scrub better be out there too, I hope, man. I love
him. Oh, no, let's see. I hope he's out there. That was my guy too, coming out of Louisville area. Yeah, he bounced around a lot, man, but he was super talented in high school, man. He was just killing dudes out there. So I'm like you, man, I always pull it for him. Big fan of him. Hope he kind of hangs on and has a career because he can definitely fill it up if he gets the opportunity.
Yep. So final score of the game, I don't even know if I mentioned that. It was 95-84 Grizzlies. They in Salt Lake City, Summer League, 2-1. Tie, I guess technically a tie for first. They had three teams that finished 2-1. So heading to Vegas Saturday to play the Clippers. We appreciate you guys. You can get the show on Twitter at Ethos Grizzlies. I'm at NBA D-Will 2-1.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at CandaceH901. CandaceH901. Isaac, take us out.
Yeah, man, Grizzlies off tomorrow. I'll take on the Clippers. Moving on to Vegas, where that's where the real action starts on Saturday night, man. And that's hopefully have a good showing out there, man. Hang another banner. Grizzlies won a championship a few years ago, man. We're trying to bring another Las Vegas Summer League championship back to the M, led by Zaire Williams. So hopefully that's in the cards.
And but sizable you can Spain, baby.
Yeah, had that parade down Bill, man, Summer League championship, and then have another one. In June of next year. So, yeah, we'll see what Santi Aldama, see what he does to redeem himself, because he got a lot of redeeming to do after what we saw in Utah. But you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_NBA. That's ISAAC_NBA. Thanks for everybody for tuning in to the podcast. We'll definitely be back breaking down all of some of these actions. So make sure you keep it locked to at Ethos Grizzlies. For David and Ken, I've been Isaac Simpson. And the next time, we're gone.